because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made sense. And I won't be ruled by the dancing west. Taking your rights to self-defense. They say you're safe, but that they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All the bodies made on foreign shores. Come a day when you'll be real hell's pay. I've gotta be free the way God made sense. And I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all of the usual caveats, of course. Quick shout out to Vorpabyte and to Annie, the radio chick you bellus from Southern Sense Talk Radio, who are first into the chat room this evening. This essentially is an additional show. It's brand new. Trying to make sure we have one extra hour of content every week to cover the new syndication package. The show now being rebroadcast in morning drive time, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday at KYAH 540 AM. And, of course, still having the two-hour block on Saturday afternoon. So 6 days a week, Tap Into the Truth for Utah's Talk Authority. And for those of you that are listening there right now, thank you very much for joining me as I bring a little East Tennessee flavor to Utah's Talk Authority. Let's jump right in with a couple of news topics breaking today. Keeping in mind, this show is recorded Tuesday evening. So for those of you listening Wednesday morning, it's still not that dated. Being reported as of this hour, started earlier this afternoon, probably about 3:34 o'clock, I think, is when I first started seeing reports. But at this moment, there appears to be some kind of deal brewing that could possibly end the partial government shutdown, at least according to the headlines. You can find them in National Review and, of course, the New York Post were a couple of the first I saw it at, probably everywhere by this hour. But Senate leaders, Mitch and Chucky, supposedly agree on a possible path. The majority leader, Mitch McConnell, and minority leader, Chuck Schumer, have agreed to a deal that could end the partial government shutdown. Each, just FYI, as of this moment, 32 days long. So it's a record, guys, a month of a partial government shutdown. Ooh, scary. Now, under this deal, the Senate will vote Thursday on two bills intended to end the shutdown. One bill includes President Donald J. Trump's request for the $5.7 billion to construct a physical barrier, also known as a wall, on the southern border. And the other one would fund the government's entities affected by the shutdown through February 8th. essentially kicking the fight down the road until then. That one is more likely to pass, I think. But the problem with that deal is February 8th isn't that far away. We are in late January. You're essentially going to reopen the government long enough to get federal employees their missed checks and a couple of more checks, and then they're going to be turning right back around, and we'll have a shutdown if nothing is agreed upon by then. So we'll see how that plays out. At any rate, we'll be undoubtedly talking a little bit more about this later in the week, so stay with me, tune in, and we'll discuss it then. Also, something else that occurred today. We've heard for a bit now that New York has been pushing to pass legislation that would legitimately allow for abortion up until birth. Well, the New York State Senate, as of this evening, has passed the bill that would legalize abortion in the state of New York up to birth. The bill passed after abortion activists have pushed for it for more than a decade in New York. Until now, it's never managed to pass the state Senate because, well, basically because of Republican lawmakers. But this past November and the elections that occurred unfortunately put a pro-abortion Democratic caucus firmly in control of both houses. Just FYI, the vote was 38-24. The governor of New York has already said that he would sign such a bill. He wants it. It's sad, quite honestly. Quick shout out now to Bigfoot and Boyd the Alaskan who've joined the chat room. Glad to have you guys here. Tuesday nights are a night I know you guys aren't accustomed to looking for me, but we will be doing a one-hour show every Tuesday for the foreseeable little bit. So put it in, slide on over here as soon as Kel finishes up over at IAW, and we'll be good to go. Now, let's get started, shall we, with the shows that with the news stories that are in the show description. We'll start off with this. Essentially is a great opportunity for me to try and sneak in some stuff that ordinarily would fall by the wayside, things that I normally wouldn't have time to get. So more content is a good thing. We'll start with why newly elected Representative Omar has started calling a border wall sinful, other than the fact that, of course, that it is. You know, if you're a leftist who wants to see our nation destroyed from within by virtue of some Cloward and Piven type stuff. On last Wednesday, Representative Omar, Democrat from the state of Minnesota, gave a speech on the floor of the House of Representatives in which she referred to the notion of a southern border wall as being sinful. Direct quote. Now, the real question is, why would it be sinful? Well, evidently, from all we can tell, calling the wall sinful seems to be an evolution from what Speaker of the House, Miss Nancy Mimi Pelosi, has repeatedly said when it's come to wall negotiations, when she said that the wall's immoral. In fact, in early December, Pelosi said the following during a press conference. She said, and I quote, "Most of us, speaking for myself, consider the wall immoral, ineffective, expensive. And the president said he promised it." See, I think that last part has a lot more to do with any of it. And I think anybody who's been paying attention and has half a brain doesn't need me to point that out, but I'm just putting it out there. He also promised Mexico would pay for it. So even if they did, it's immoral still. We have a responsibility, all of us, to secure our borders, north, south, and coming in by plane. And that's a responsibility we honor. But we do so by honoring our values as well. Pretty words from Mimi. Now, what's really interesting is that both Omar and Pelosi's statements is that they never really explain how the border wall is immoral or, in Omar's, sinful. They don't really want to delve into that, I suppose, because, again, facts don't care about feelings. Thank you, Ben Shapiro. Since the first time I've heard Ben Shapiro say that, that has become part of my lexicon, too. I give him credit, obviously. I couldn't take credit away from him if I wanted to. It's so funny, but it is so fantastic. Thank you, Ben. Facts don't care about your feelings. But according to Merriam-Webster, they define the word moral as of or relating to principles of right and wrong in behavior. It also defines the word as right, as being in accordance with what is just, good, and proper. And lastly, it also defines sin as an offense against religious or moral law, or an action that is felt to be highly reprehensible. With that in mind, I'm back to asking the question, what makes it immoral? What makes it sinful? Now, these definitions are important because they allow one to better understand what Omar and Pelosi are really saying. Pelosi claims that the wall is immoral. Apparently means that it's not in accordance with what is just, good, and proper. Omar claims that a wall is sinful, which means that it's an offense against some moral law. But what is just and what is moral in the very specific context? A wall would prevent individuals and groups from entering the United States without the express permission of the government. How is such a thing unjust? It would neither prevent legal immigration nor keep asylum seekers from accessing legal points of entry. Given that little bit of fact, what is immoral and sinful in the minds of Pelosi and Representative Omar? What in their minds can be, well, it can really only be one thing, right? What they're really complaining about, what they're really whining about, what they're really going on about, wham, wham, boo, hoo. What's immoral and sinful in their eyes is the prevention of unfettered access to the United States by anyone who wants to enter. You want to come in? Just come on over, honey. You're an MS-13 gang member? That's all right. Come on in. You can make your way all the way up to New Jersey and start killing teenagers tomorrow. It'll be fine. You're a drug runner, unaffiliated with a gang, but you just hooked up with the cartels? Come on. You know, if there's one thing we really don't have enough of in the United States, it's fentanyl. I'm sure you can help us with that. Come on. You're a human trafficker? You smuggle people? You know what? Everybody needs a job. I'm glad you found one that, you know, really serves a purpose to the communities in Central America, while at the same time allowing for you to make a living wage. Just come on, human trafficker. You're actually sliding over into Arizona to kidnap people from as far in as Phoenix and take them back across the Mexican border to ransom them back. Well, you know what? Again, everybody needs a job. Just remember to donate to the Democratic Party, please. Members of the Democratic Party can't simply demand that the United States adopt an open borders policy. Even most of their voters would see through that widely open thing. So despite fringe progressives like the vaunted Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gaining ground among elected Democratic lawmakers, to admit that one adheres to such a philosophy regarding immigration would likely agitate and even alienate a large portion of the Democratic base, not to mention independent voters, which, of course, that would jeopardize future elections. So the precarious position in which many Democrats have found themselves, it requires a healthy dose of reassuring but vague policy proposals. Things like increased technology and more advanced infrastructure. These hollow promises can pacify voters. But as long as the Democrats can keep up appearances, those voter pacifications are good. As soon as they can't, however, things begin to change. Now, such vagary needs a sufficient distracting enemy. In this particular case, Democratic lawmakers have made the border wall into the enemy and have opened rhetorical fire on its proponents. The pejoratives must be continuously ratcheted up lest voters become glassy-eyed, turn to scrutinize progressive policy proposals, and then find the man behind the curtain. So at first, the wall was pointless. Then it was a waste of money, which we all know is a red herring when a Democrat's saying it. Nobody else likes to spend money like Democrats. I'm sorry. So first it's pointless. Then it's a waste of money. Then it was cruel. Then it was immoral. Now it's sinful. What comes next is, well, anyone's guess, but it will change. It has to. Otherwise, they can't continue to ratchet it up. The Democrats, make no mistake about it, they will do everything they can to keep that particular curtain shut. So watch for it. Wait for it. It's coming. Now, also, had a bit of interesting news. Not going to spend a whole lot of time on it because I've only got an hour. But it's some interesting news. I got to say that I really liked it. The U.S. Supreme Court did something kind of cool today. Made a lot of headlines. Actually, at least so far, based on what last week's are doing, this link is probably in the running for most shared, most engaged social media post for me for this week. Obviously, this week's just started, but like I said, based on last week's numbers, this one's in the running. The Supreme Court essentially reinstated President Trump's ban on transgender military personnel. Now, like I said, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and this reinstatement is essentially only temporary, but depending on how long it takes it to push through the courts, that temporary could still be a long time. So, like I said, the Supreme Court breaking along ideological lines, no surprise there. This past Tuesday, that being January 22nd, 2019, those of you listening to the show live, that was today. For those of you hearing the show later, well, it was this past Tuesday. On Tuesday, they allowed the Pentagon to move ahead with a plan to bar transgender people from serving in the military while lawsuits contesting the policy work their way through the courts. Now, what's interesting about this is lots of times when a court intervenes in a situation like this, they will normally break on the side of what's being challenged. They'll say, okay, you can't institute this policy until the lower courts have ruled and you're done doing all this fighting. It's put in limbo. You can't move forward with it. But the Supreme Court decided that, oh, you know what? Guess what? It's the military. You're the commander-in-chief of the United States military by virtue of being the duly elected and sworn into office president of the United States. You can make these policies. This is within your role. It's within your constitutionally guaranteed powers. So, congratulations, Donald Trump. You get this put in place at least until it makes its way through the courts. I'm glad to see it went no direction it doesn't normally go. Like I said, the court, it was a 5-4 decision. And this 5-4 decision removed injunctions imposed by lower courts that had blocked the plan. the five conservative justices, Roberts, Thomas, Alito, and two Donald Trump nominees, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, moved to lift the injunctions. The court's liberal wing, of course, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Breyer, would have kept them in place. The court decided not to take up the plan itself, as the Trump administration had wanted, opting instead to allow lower courts to hear the legal battle. So basically, what we have is, at least for the time being, the commander-in-chief getting to actually be the commander-in-chief, and the courts having to actually pay attention to the fact that the chief executive has constitutional power, has constitutional authority. Oh my goodness, the commander-in-chief, or the president of the United States, as the chief executive of the United States federal government, has constitutionally enumerated powers, of which the Congress and the judiciary should not attempt to interfere. And there's differences between things that apply to checks and balances. There are also specific responsibilities that are given to each branch of government. In fact, there's even specific responsibilities designated to the House and specific responsibilities designated to the Senate. Now, the really cool thing is, I know, I peek into the chat room right now, I see Bigfoot, I see Annie, I see Boyd, I see Vorp, and I know I don't have to tell this to any of you guys. I know, based on the interactions that I have via social media through the weeks and all of the great conversations I get to have with folks, I don't have to explain this to a lot of the folks that will be listening to the show on a regular basis. But on the off chance that there is one of those folks that accidentally came across the show, on the off chance that there's one of you folks out there that maybe leans a little left, but you're willing to listen to the other side, and I mean actually listen, this is for you. Don't take my word for it. Go do your own research. Try actually reading the Constitution. It's a great read, and you'll find yourself instantly better informed than a majority of people who currently serve in our Congress, both houses. Just go do it. It's within the president's power. And I'm so glad that the Supreme Court of the United States, even though it still went down conservatives against liberals, I'm so glad they actually did the right thing and said, okay, here's the middle. Boys and girls, here's the bottom line. I don't care how social justice warrior your mentality may be. I don't care how equal rights you may be. I don't care how inclusive you may think everything should be. The United States military, or actually any military anywhere around the world, is not the place for social engineering. It is not the place for social experimentation. The military has a very specific job, and let me break that down for you in case you don't get it. It's to blow stuff up and kill people. They go break things. That is their primary job, and we spend a lot of money making sure that they are the best trained, best prepared, and best equipped group of people to go accomplish that goal. We probably still are not spending enough, especially when it comes to the means of cyber defense and cyber attacking. We're probably better along than most of us realize, but we're probably a little behind the curve in those particular areas. At the end of the day, the United States military needs to be able to operate with the least amount of distraction and the shortest amount of time from orders given to orders executed. And that is normally accomplished by like-minded individuals who do not have social constructs interfering with their day-to-day operations, whether it be training or mission deployments. It's insane. We don't need that in the military. That doesn't mean that transgenders can't find some great way to serve the country if they want. And in fact, I would encourage them to find a way to serve the country and go do it. Because guess what? If you're American and you want to serve the country, then do it. Nothing's stopping you. All right. Had a flashback story, and I came across this, and I know we talked about it a little bit at the time, but during the whole Flint, Michigan water issue, it made national headlines. There was a big talk about federal involvement, trying to help make things right, and it was a bad situation that was – it was made bad by local politicians. It was made worse by state politicians, and – unfortunately, as is so often the case, it was the people who suffered. It's the people who paid the price. And actually, today are probably still paying a price. But I wanted to take a little trip back, because I think ever so often it's really important to remind everybody how some public servant, now that's in air quotes in case you guys are listening on a radio and can't see, air quotes work so great on the radio. How some public servants view their job. It seems this story, let me date it for you, is back from Wednesday, May the 11th in 2016. It seems the Flint mayor diverted water crisis money to a political PAC. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Money that was given to help the citizens recover from their water crisis was used, it was taken and then later used to try and get Democrats elected to office. Something you wouldn't think would be all that hard in an area like Flint. Anyway, the mayor of Flint, Michigan, was reacting to a federal lawsuit which claimed donors were directed away from a charity for victims of the city's water crisis and towards a fund sharing a name with her campaign fund. She reacted on that date, calling the allegations outrageously false. And of course, they must be outrageously false, right? Anyway, the suit, in the suit, fired administrator Natalia, I'll get there eventually, Henderson's her last name, so how about we go with that? It's tongue-tied, I hate it. Natasha Henderson claimed that in February of 2016, Flint's then-mayor Karen Weaver directed the former city employee and a city volunteer to stop directing potential donors to a charity called Safe Water, Safe Homes, a charity that we actually talked about here at Tap Into the Truth during that ongoing situation. Now, that charity was run by the Community Foundation of Greater Flint and had been approved by the city for water crisis donations. Instead, the lawsuit claims that city employee Maxine Murray was directed by Weaver to begin directing donations to Caring About Flint. I see it's a clever name. Instead of Caring About, it's Karen About. Karen, of course, being her name. It's very clever. I give kudos to the creativity. Anyway, according to the lawsuit, Murray came to Henderson in tears and in fear of going to jail, which, guess what? Probably should have happened if she followed it. Weaver deferred response to the allegations to her legal counsel at the time, but not without making comment. And that's probably where she screwed up a little bit, because every attorney will tell their client the first thing you do about anything ongoing is you shut up. No talkie. Her comment, of course, was, quote, "It saddens me that someone would attempt to taint me as mayor of the city that is dealing with a major public health crisis, which has affected every man, woman, and child in Flint. I will continue to work hard to serve the people of Flint, seek support for our residents, and secure the necessary resources from generous donors from around our great nation to help the city and citizens I have been elected to serve." Now, There is, of course, an entire article that goes with, and you can find that on the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page if you are so inclined. I'm going to hold up reading at that point. Oh, man. Vork just threw a rock at me. It's a good thing I can duck. Nah, nah. The point being is that this is not uncommon behavior for some of our more political individuals. When we talk about elected office, we often refer to it as the public sector. When we talk about government-ran anything, we often refer to that as the public sector. Because in theory, as it's been designated, it is supposed to be designed to provide for the public use and for the public good. But we see time and time again, people with extremely low net worths, when they run for office, meander their way through a few terms in various offices, and it gets really wild when you look at national offices being held. But we see them take their minuscule net worth, and somehow magically it grows and grows. There is no question that when it comes to individuals who manage to find wealth through doing public service, well, they're undoubtedly stealing from that public they have promised to serve. All right, let me hit the Edwards Notebook and the Songs and Stories Veterans Tip of the Month. And when we come back, we will continue. So stay with me through this short break, and I will be right back.
America's founding fathers warned against getting the United States entangled in foreign conflicts. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, since around 625 A.D., Muslim factions have been slaughtering each other and planning a worldwide caliphate. For many years, America has been battling in Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. It used to be that our mighty armed forces fought to totally defeat enemies. But ever since the kooky concept of rules of engagement, our military heroes have been hampered from fully engaging and defeating adversaries. It should not be difficult to understand that no enemy is defeated until they cannot fight back or start up again once you back off. ISIS has been reduced, but not yet defeated. Currently, there are 30,000 ISIS terrorists with about $450 million left to buy more armaments. I agree with President Trump that our great soldiers should come home, but first, they should be allowed to fully engage the enemy and light them up until they fully surrender or meet their maker. Our military has the skill set to get the job done quickly, if unleashed, without any foolish PC impediments. May God bless our military heroes and our republic. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on AmericaMatters.us and 12 a.m. Sundays on Talk America Radio Network.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
Dan Perkins here for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. Michelle Fisher, U.S. Air Force 2000 to 2011, said recently, they opened up the women's clinic up there at the VA, and that's actually helped immensely. Research shows that people often do better in treatment with others that are more like them. As a result, mental health services just for women are now offered in many VAs across the country. A new position has been created to help women veterans called the VA Women's Veterans Program Manager. Every VA medical center in the country now has a Women Veterans Program Manager. This person is your advocate. They can help you get VA services and programs, state and federal benefits, and resources in the area where you live. If you need help, call your local VA and ask to speak with the Women's Veterans Program Manager. This has been Dan Perkins with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for staying with me through that ever so brief break. Quick note also to remind everyone, if you are so inclined, obviously, the Edwards Notebook was on there early. Ron Edwards also does the Ron Edwards Experience. It's a one-hour weekly show. And this upcoming Friday, January 25th, I will be guest hosting for Ron as he's going to be in the great state of Texas doing a little speechifying. So while he's out of town doing his part to try and help save the Republic, I'll be sitting in behind the microphone and helping keep that great Ron Edwards experience train rolling. So again, if any of you guys normally listen in, by all means, please do. If you don't normally listen in and can't quite catch it live as it airs 4 p.m. Eastern, you can find it over at Spreaker afterwards, and I'm sure there's some other places too, but that's the first place that I know of, so because that's usually where I go to listen to the show if I don't get to listen in live. Now, let's get on with this show. Is a one-hour format with a lot of stuff to cover is a lot more challenging than the two-hour format. This one's something that kind of caught my eye, we'll just get into the article, and then I'll speechify myself at that point. It seems there's a Minnesota high school basketball team that they didn't get to play in a tournament that was scheduled for this past Monday because of something some fans did at a game. The superintendent of the Rural Minnesota School District canceled a high school basketball team's scheduled participation in a Monday tournament that was, of course, set aside for MLK Day, Monday tournament, because a few student fans recently brought a Trump flag to the game. Last week, students at Jordan High School showed up to a game with a flag that said Trump 2020, Keep America Great. And a coach for the opposing team, Minneapolis Roosevelt, took a picture of the students holding the flag and wrote about it on Facebook, saying, quote, I coach a predominantly black inner city high school team. We go out to a rural area in Jordan, Minnesota, and this is there. Please explain how and why this is appropriate at a high school basketball game. The coach's name, by the way, is Michael Walker, in case you want to go look him up on social media. One person commented on the post to explain that she lent the flag to the students to be used as part of a planned USA-themed night. But by that Sunday, Jordan School District Superintendent Matthew Helgerson announced that he wouldn't be allowing the Jordan High School basketball team to participate in an MLK Day tournament, saying, quote, given recent events, we believe the participation of our team in the event will distract from the hard work of the athletes and the upbeat focus of the MLK Showcase. After discussion with the MLK Showcase event coordinator, a decision has been made to pull out of the MLK Showcase game on Monday, January 21st. We will continue to work with the Minneapolis School District to move forward in a positive direction. Now, the tournament took place at Minneapolis Patrick Henry, whose coach, Jamel Jackson, said that he sympathizes with the Jordan High School athletes since they, quote, will be thinking the entire day about why they're not playing. So let me get this straight. See, at this point, I have to just slide away from the article. One coach makes the accusation that this was a racist event. Vorp's making threats from the chat room, by the way. To all you lefties, today is anniversary of Kent State Massacre. Don't get out of line. We know what to do. He's fired up today. He's already throwing a rock at me. I would take him pretty serious if I was you guys. But anyway, so let me get this straight. This one coach gets mad because there's a Trump 2020 poster at a game. Okay. He wants to try and turn that into a racist event. Okay. He whines about it on Facebook. Of course, you know, why not? Okay. Then there's a sudden and an immediate overreaction by the superintendent of the school system of the school that was involved. Okay. Again, student fans do something that is inherently not racist, but is interpreted as a microaggression, thereby becoming racist. And then another coach pretends to have sympathy for the kids, but basically throws it up in their face that, oh, you're not getting to play in our tournament. And guess why? Because somebody in your school thinks Donald Trump is worth reelecting. That's essentially what's being done here. It's insane. When are we going to return to sanity? When are we going to return to sanity? That's all I want to know. I know. It's not likely. All right. So today's show title, of course, is it's a pretty simple one. It's why you should fact check the fact checkers. Ties into the next two. I'm going to try to sneak in, and I'm already up against the clock, but I'm going to try. First of all, PolitiFact, which is often looked to for fact checking, they basically kind of proved once again why you should take their fact checking with a grain of salt. You see, well, they kind of did it again. In a post from January 9th of this year, 2019, PolitiFact quotes President Donald Trump as saying, Senator Chuck Schumer, who you will be hearing from later tonight. Now, this, of course, is from the Oval Office address. Senator Chuck Schumer, who you'll be hearing from later tonight, has repeatedly supported a physical barrier in the past, along with many other Democrats. Now, he said that during the January 8th address from the Oval Office. He also said they changed their minds only after I was elected president. Okay, so far everything there is true. No fact-checking needed, but if you're going to fact-check it, it only takes a few minutes to realize, and I know leftists, you might want to sit down for this. Donald Trump was right. He told the truth. But here's what PolitiFact concluded, based solely on what the president said on January 8th. Trump said Schumer has repeatedly supported a physical barrier in the past, along with many other Democrats. They changed their minds only after I was elected president. Schumer, along with tens of other Democrats, including former President Barack Hussein Al-Akbar Obama, okay, I added that part, President Barack Obama, voted for the Secure Fence Act of 2006, which authorized building a fence along 700 miles of the border between the United States and Mexico. That's the majority of the barrier in place today along the southern border. But, okay, so that's their part there. But this being PolitiFact, they couldn't give Donald Trump the win. So they used the president's previous claim that a 2006 fence was not a wall, but a little fence. Trump may have derided their fence, but that doesn't change the fact that Schumer and others previously supported a physical barrier. The outlet also dinged Trump for comments made during the campaign that he would build a wall made of hardened concrete, and kept adding to the heights of the wall. Trump isn't married to that vision of the wall. And just last year, years after the wall version that PolitiFact decided to include to get to their mostly false rating, Trump moved away from calling for a concrete wall. PolitiFact links to an article about Trump's evolution on the wall, but doesn't mention this when knocking him. PolitiFact decides that Trump's completely true statement about supporting a physical barrier in the past is mostly false. And they come to that conclusion because the wall Trump is now calling for is more ambitious, politically and physically. Now, the outlet also moved its rating because Trump said, quote, "They changed their minds only after I was elected president," even though the Democrats proposed funding for the fence they approved in 2006. Had a Democrat made the claims against a Republican, the rating surely would be mostly true. At the end of the day, PolitiFact did what a lot of our current mainstream media does every day. They ignore what's right in front of them. And they choose to spin. They choose to fabricate. They choose to flat out lie when it serves their purpose. They choose to hide information, and they choose to abdicate their actual responsibilities. If you're going to be a fact checker, then you need to check the facts as they are in front of you and not look to extraneous information that is outside of the comments that are being made. What constantly surprises and shocks me is how willing the left is to include context when it comes to making their own arguments and demand that that context be included in the discussion, but how quickly they want to ignore context when it comes to the other side. Not only is it intellectually inconsistent, it is intellectually dishonest. We have a media, PolitiFact technically falls into the category as part of that, that is refusing to acknowledge its most basic purpose, and that is to inform with due diligence and honesty, to report even on the parts you don't want to report about. I don't hold back information when it comes to stories that I don't necessarily want to report. I don't like talking about it when a conservative, especially if it's a politician that I like, has done something wrong, but I will not keep that information from you. I'm not even a journalist. I'm a commentator. I'm a guy sitting behind a mic for a little bit of time every week who does it mostly for therapeutic reasons and always happy to see strong numbers for a show, always happy to see folks hanging out in my chat room, and always happy to know that I have radio stations that want to increase my presence on their airwaves because people are responding in a positive way. I am happy, I am blessed, I am grateful for all of that, but I'm not a journalist. And I adhere to more journalistic standards than our mainstream media. We saw that demonstrated over the weekend when it comes to the Covington school, the Covington Catholic school stuff. We will be talking more about that later this week. More and more things are constantly happening. The school had to be closed because of a bomb threat. They've had to cancel basketball games. We still have mainstream media. The video has been debunked. I actually spent the time to watch the nearly 2-hour full-length live stream video. I watched it myself. And it is so very clear that what the folks on the left did is they saw these white kids wearing MAGA hats and their blood boiled. So they sifted through nearly 2 hours of content to find the 2.5 minutes that they could post together that they could tell a false narrative. And then not only did they go wild, did Hollywood types go out. Celebrities went nuts, but also so did to the media. The media decided to report on this like it was a legitimate thing. Where is the fact-checking there? Where is the journalistic integrity? There were death threats made against these kids. There has been doxing done against these kids. They're having to endure a ridiculous amount of ridicule for having done the right thing. There was no mention initially of the fact that these kids were actually being taunted by this group of black Israelites. The black Hebrew Israelites, they're an extremist group that thinks that they're the actual descendants of the Jewish people, and that today's Jews are not the descendants. They're not the tribes of Israel. They're strongly anti-homosexual. They were chanting and saying things that were very anti-gay. And these kids who were attending a private Catholic school actually simply made the statement that they're humans too, making the point that they should have rights. See, these black Israelites were complaining that the U.S. government bestows rights on homosexuals. Well, guess what? They're human beings too. They should have rights. These kids said something that the folks on the left that wanted to lambast these poor kids should have actually applauded them for, but they couldn't. Why? Because number one, they're white, and number two, they had on a MAGA hat. Oh, the shame, the horror. They handpick. And the more stuff that keeps coming out about this story, the easier it is to see how ridiculous, how contrived, and how staged this whole thing was. And make no mistake about it, this story basically comes out of the fact that these kids were at the March for Life rally. Ooh, how dare they actually claim to be Catholic and stand up for Catholic principles, actual Catholic doctrine that exists within the church. Never mind what the Pope is saying right now. Never mind what the local priest might be saying. Is actually church doctrine that life is precious, that life is sacred. Well, what do these boys have to say about trying to take away a woman's right to reproductive health? Nothing. But then taking away a life of an unborn child is not really about reproductive health, is it? It's a nice little euphemism that the Democratic Party likes to use right now so that they don't have to say, we need to spend federal tax dollars on murdering children. Every time they talk about how Donald Trump is going around kicking puppies and eating babies, they need to stop and think for just a few seconds about the fact that they're murdering more babies every year than Donald Trump could eat in a lifetime. It did not take until the end of the day Saturday for this video to be completely debunked. And if you watch it, it's clear. This Native American guy, this North American Indian, this whatever he wants to be called, and I don't care what he wants to be called, he's a Democratic operative, has been for a long time. He's involved with fundraising, and he's been in a questionable situation before that's similar to this. Bottom line, probably not the most trustworthy individual. But all you have to do is watch this. And what does MSNBC do? They bring on tribal law experts who happened to be there at the time and didn't see the actual incident, but what parts they did see before they left, it was a very dangerous thing, right? There was just a change in the atmosphere. These kids did exactly what they should have done. They confronted a group that was talking smack about how homosexuals shouldn't have any rights at all. That's BS. They are human beings. They should have rights. They should have the same rights that everyone else has. They should not have special rights. They should not be a protected class. They should not be treated any differently than anyone else in this country should be treated. But they do have rights, basic, general human rights, and that should be recognized by all people. So The kids did the right thing there. Then they started getting called all kinds of ridiculous and crazy homophobic slurs and other stuff that I guarantee that if I, as a white man, was saying these things to a teenage kid, would probably be arrested. Actually, I would definitely be arrested. I probably wouldn't be able to make bail. So then they fired back to that by starting to chant school cheers. Ooh, that certainly elevated things. They just basically raised their own voices so they wouldn't have to hear what these black Israelites were saying. And they kind of showed they weren't going to back down. And this guy comes beating his little drum along. And these kids, if you watch the whole video, you see that they kind of get along with it, because at first it's pretty clear that they were thinking the guy was coming in to try and help tone things down. And they kind of felt like, since his drum beat was right along with the chants they were doing, that was there. But I will make you this promise. There is no way that these leftists haven't went over every single second of this nearly 2 hours of content. People claim they chanted build the wall. Have you heard anybody produce the audio segment where you hear them chanting build the wall? No. Do you see where they are menacing? The best footage they got of trying to claim menacing is the one kid that kind of, he was trying to smile. And the fact that this guy came right up to him and was in his face, he was trying to show a level of appreciation. It's like, okay, whatever. That was it. There's no malice. It's clear if you watch it and you're trying to be objective. And thank goodness that some folks actually had the decency to at least turn around and apologize. Thank goodness for people like Tim Pool, who actually was out there up front. You know, he's a guy that actually leans a little to the left politically. And he's, I've gotten where I appreciate watching his YouTube videos, though, because he makes every effort to be intellectually honest down the pike. And he doesn't let his personal views interfere with how he reports the news. He was one of the first people I heard come out and say, hey, this is a bunch of BS. Anyway, I am swiftly running out of time. So we will undoubtedly be talking further about this, but here's the other thing. We had some mainstream media today also. Rather than admit that they were wrong with running with this story, they decided to run another story saying, well, this particular incident, this instance may not have been what we thought it was, but they're still guilty from the past. They tracked down a basketball game from some time back where the kids were all painted up black and tried to claim that they were in blackface. This is one of those games where the fans wear a certain color. One of their school colors happens to be black. They were painted up in full black, not as to be in blackface, but because it was the school color. They were being active with their school spirit. There's just so much that stinks about the story. But they still are desperate to prove that, you know what, just like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, we may not have been factually accurate, but we're still morally right. Until you get over the fact that these are some white kids wearing MAGA hats and that's what pissed you off, but these are some kids at the March for Life and that's what pissed you off, and that there was actual video proof that shows that you guys ran with the story without checking anything first, and that's pissed you off. Until you admit all of that, you're not only not factually accurate, but you're not morally right either. So that's going to be it now, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to check me out again for the Wednesday night show. We'll be talking a lot about the new Green Deal. Two separate guests coming on to discuss exactly that. So I'll see you then. In the meanwhile, though, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort and, more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Goodbye, everybody.
Seems like a thousand years since we had real fears, but the old ones won't forget. These broken levee walls had a few close calls,
but they haven't fallen yet. And you know the rain's coming, the rain's coming. All your days and all your nights, it brings a storm on you. When the sun beats down and it bakes the ground, and you watch the rich land die. Such a vicious drought, even hope's in doubt. But there are no clouds in the sky. But you know the rain's coming, the rain's coming. All your days and all your nights, it brings a storm on you. When you feel the first drop fall, when it kisses your skin, the storm will begin. Bring with it promise of change. When you hear the thunder roll, the lightning's begun, the flood will come to wash out the things that remain. Storm on you, because the rain.